Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. Our guest today is Karen Warzek. She's a wife and mother of five children. Her youngest, who is now 13, was born seemingly healthy. In her first weeks, it became clear that she wasn't developing normally. After 10 years of looking for a diagnosis and not finding answers, they decided to do whole exome sequencing. That finally gave them an answer. She has a mutation of her CAMK2 gene. It was so newly discovered that only a handful of people were diagnosed with this. Since it has been discovered, more children are being found to be in the family of CAMK2 mutations. It is so new that they are just beginning studying this in humans, and there isn't a formal quote-unquote syndrome name of it as yet.
Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Good morning, Karen, and thank you for taking the time to join us today. Please start us out by telling our listeners what exactly is this CAMK2?
Okay, so for short, we'll call it CAMK2, and we all have this gene. We have, actually, there's a family of four, CAMK2A, which is alpha, and then there's beta, delta, and gamma. And so basically what this gene does is it is responsible for transferring calcium between cells. And I'm sorry, it's way more complex than that, but that's basically what it does. And so, you know, genes are made up of proteins. And in my daughter's case, on her CAMK2B gene, along the way, there was a protein that was misspelled, is what they call it, a misspelling. So one protein was transferred out and another protein was put in its place, and it's the wrong one, and it causes the cells or the genes to act abnormally, which means that it sends the wrong message and her body doesn't function normally. So back when she was first diagnosed, I say, as back then 3 years ago, there were probably 10 people known.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it was just discovered. So in the past, there probably have been a ton of people with this disorder, and now that they can identify it, more coming forward. So it generally, it causes intellectual disabilities, causes epilepsy in some. Some kids have GI issues. Some are tube fed. Some have motor delays. Some walk, others don't. My daughter is non-ambulatory. She does get around. She's very resourceful. She log rolls around the house and can squeeze to get through doorways even. So she's a very smart girl. She knows what to do. A lot of kids have self-harming behaviors, autistic features. Yeah, and so specifically my daughter, she didn't sit up until her first birthday. I noticed seizures right from the start. I brought it up at her 6-week checkup. And her doctor said, no, she called it pseudo seizures because of GERD. And it turns out she did have some reflux, but nobody was believing me that she was having seizures. So I spent a ton of time on the internet trying to describe these seizures, which I thought them to be temporal lobe seizures. And she was 5 months old before she had such a pronounced seizure that somebody finally believed us. And she had her first EEG then. She didn't meet her milestones, never looked me in the eye, never smiled. When I brought this up early on, my OBGYN, so because of that, I thought she wasn't bonding with me. My OBGYN said, oh, you have postpartum depression. This can't be. And so they pretty much tried to make me think I was just imagining everything. But she's the youngest of five.
Right, you have a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had four typical kids before her, and I just knew something was not right.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through 10 years of CTs, MRIs, two rounds of genetic testing, mitochondrial, she had a muscle biopsy, and everything was negative. So we decided to stop putting her through all this because it was just too much, and we weren't getting answers. And one day a neurologist said to me, you know, she may not have a known syndrome, but she has her own syndrome, and you should really get the whole exome testing done just to see. And so we were like, okay. And it took about 6 weeks to get the results. And I was really not expecting anything. And then they said, oh, yeah, this PMK2 thing. And I was like, oh. And I went home, jumped on Facebook, searched for it. And there's a little family of PMK2 people out there. Okay. So we've been family ever since.
Sure, sure.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sorry that you had to go through all of that to kind of find out what was going on. What about, do you know or how do you find out about this genetic mutation? How does someone get it?
It is what they call a de novo mutation. So it just randomly happens early in her first weeks of development. So we were both, all of us were tested, and my husband and myself don't have any genes that would, we wouldn't be a carrier.
Could it be recessive?
I can't really speak too much about that. I do know that in our group, at least one of the parents is a carrier and have passed it on, but I don't really know much about that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Karen. I think our listeners will have a better understanding of what we're going to be talking about, because when you just talk about a bunch of initials, you know, what is that?
Yeah.
And especially since it's so
rare,
horribly rare,
yeah.
You know, no one would have any idea. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Karen, you mentioned that it affects your daughter's ambulation and motor function. Have you seen how it affects her differently as she progresses in age? And is she's now 10 years old?
She's 13.
13 years old. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so she has intellectual disability. She's nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
We have, as of yet, to find communication that works for her. So pretty much we've stuck to a routine all of her life. She's trained us pretty much. We know what she wants. And I can tell by her vocalizations, if she's hungry, if she's bored. So yeah, she's the boss around here. she also has GI issues. She has the reflux. And she has dysphagia, which means she cannot swallow properly. So we have to puree all of her foods because she doesn't chew. She mashes food in her mouth. And then we have to thicken her liquids because she aspirates if we don't.
Mm-hmm.
As she's growing, because of her low muscle tone, she's starting to develop a little bit of neuromuscular scoliosis. She has, of course, decreased bone density because she doesn't stand regularly. So she doesn't get, those bones don't get, you know, the weight bearing that it needs to develop bone.
Mm-hmm.
She does have self-harming behaviors. And that's changed over the years as well. And I think it's because she's kind of growing into herself a little more. She's more comfortable in her own skin. But when she was a baby, she would cry. Our first 3 years with her, she cried constantly, and she didn't sleep. She would go for days and days at a time where she just would not sleep. And she would throw her head back and nail you in the chest or nail you in the face, and that was pretty tough. And now when she's frustrated or surprised, she bites herself. and she bites one spot on her arm, on her right arm, at so hard that I don't think she can feel pain, honestly.
Oh,
she can break the
wow.
skin.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have a little brace for the periods when we go through that. And then the most concerning thing for me, and that I haven't seen so much in the other kids that I know, is that she has these cycles of weakness. She would regress. Back when she was, it started when she was about three, she would lose all of her muscle tone. Like she would go floppy like a newborn. I remember feeding her and her head just bobbed forward and hit the tray of her high chair. That's how weak she was. She lost her ability to eat without choking, and she would sleep constantly. And our first time we experienced this, she had muscle conduction studies, she had scans, she had EEG. It never showed anything. And this would cycle every 3 to 5 months. And then as she got older, those periods started becoming more and more far apart. So we went a year and a half, I think, one time without anything like that. Lately, she's going back into cycling around, but it's presenting differently. She's just sleeping constantly. She doesn't lose her muscle tone. She wakes up, she eats. That's important for her. She's food motivated. And she'll sleep, and she'll do this for a week or two at a time, and she'll come out of it and be okay for a couple of weeks and then do it all again. And the doctors don't really know what to make of it. They say it's her way of fighting a virus, but it's way too cyclical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I brought that up with a doctor who's in Rotterdam, and we'll get more into that in a little bit. Who was doing like a question and answer for the parents. And she agreed with me that, yeah, it sounds more like whatever's going on at a cellular level with her more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So what else? The seizures. So from birth to 3 years old, she was having them. And then they stopped. And we took her off the seizure meds, and she's been great for 10 years. And then last September, she started having seizures again, but they're different in presentation. They're, instead of just spacing out, it's more like a grand mal. Mm. And it was only happening at night after she fell asleep, and just every 26, 27, 28 days, which makes me wonder now if
hormones
are coming in.
Right.
Hormones are
right.
coming into play,
right.
and it's affecting her.
Yeah.
So, but she's doing well. She's back on medication, and it seems to be working. So, but that's just the life in her 13 years.
Well, I have two questions. So, what is her favorite food?
Her favorite food?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she will eat anything. Last night we had pizza,
okay.
and I ordered a large pizza,
mm-hmm.
and we have to grind it up for, she ate almost half a large pizza. And this child is tiny. She is all of 68 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And just skinny as a rail, and I don't know how she can eat the way she does. And she loves munchkins.
What's a munchkin?
Ice cream sandwiches.
Okay.
I think she means Dunkin' yeah. Munchkin.
Oh, yeah,
oh,
yeah,
yeah.
Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Who doesn't?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Who doesn't love Dunkin' Munchkins?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ice cream sandwiches, okay.
And she pretty much eats whatever I make. I'm a big cook, and I usually don't make the same thing twice, and she happily eats it. She does have some food allergies. We found that out the hard way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's hard when you have a nonverbal child.
Right.
And,
of course.
We sit down to eat, and she can't say, my throat feels funny, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm itchy. So we have to wait for the symptoms to actually present themselves, and that was pretty scary. But we found out she's allergic to salmon.
Oh, okay.
And so seafood allergies, nut allergies.
Right, okay.
But other than that, she will eat anything you give her.
Hmm. Well, we're from Chicago, so we can understand her, you know, her loving pizza.
except we're from New York, so we
They have their own pizza.
Oh, those are fighting words.
Yes, yes. All right. What was your other question?
Oh, and my other question was, is gene therapy a possibility for kids with...
Not yet.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, not yet. They have to understand the gene more, and they're
sure. It's so
new. Pretty much, they know how it affects mice, but now they need to know exactly what it does with our kids.
Okay.
Well, Karen, can you tell us how common, I guess, this CAMK2 is? And I don't know, this is probably a silly question, but have you ever even heard of this prior to your daughter being born?
Nope, never heard of it before. And I would say it's growing. So it's probably more common than we think. But back then, there was just a handful. Now I think they're up to maybe, well, last spring it was like 70 known cases. And it's probably up to 100 now. But still, considering the whole wide world,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess a rare condition is under 200,000. So, I mean, this is very rare, very rare.
Mm-hmm.
And what other treatments are on the horizon for this particular condition?
So there's a place in Rotterdam, Netherlands, Van Worden Labs. They just are beginning to, well, it's been a couple of years now, take interest in taking a look at our kids. They just held the second CAMK2 conference this past spring. And so because it's in another country, they're trying to communicate with our doctors in this country to see how testing can be done. There are kids from all over the world, so there are kids closer that have actually been started or have started the testing. So hopefully with the research just beginning, there'll be something in the near future or for future generations.
It's hard. Being a caregiver is a tough role. Karen, what role does self-care play in your everyday life? Because you've had a rough 13 years here.
I would like to say I have really great self-care behaviors, but I was a mom of 5 and I work full-time, so it's really hard to get time for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I like to try to take a day on the weekend. And my husband's really great about getting up with her and letting me sleep in and kind of rejuvenate. And he's a big fisherman, so every couple of weeks he tries to get out on the ice and have a little him time.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish I could kick back in a bubble bath a couple of nights a week, but sometimes it doesn't work out.
Sure. And what role have your family and friends played in the healthcare journey with your daughter?
My in-laws have been saints. They have stepped in, both my mother and father-in-law and my brother-in-law, to take care of her while my husband and I do something for ourselves. She has a caregiver who has become a friend over the years. She was her one-to-one aide in preschool.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she aged out of preschool, she started to take her every day after school. So she's been a godsend. Our circle is really small. And sometimes, you've probably heard it before, the friends that you've had when you have a child with special needs, they kind of distance themselves sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's been our experience.
Right.
That's a shame. But it is difficult, I think, for some people to to have the empathy and to...
Well, if that's not part of their life, they don't know it.
It's hard for them to understand the intensity of it.
We run into that a lot, absolutely.
Right.
You know, I probably come across to them as very non-committal. I remember years ago, it was wintertime, and somebody asked me to go to the mall. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I'll have to pack her up. I'll have to put her wheelchair together, stick it in the car, it's snowing, and it'll be lunchtime, and I don't have any way to grind her food in a mall. And my friend just couldn't understand all that. She was very offended that I wouldn't go. But those are the kind of internal battles I have as a mom of a kid with special needs.
Okay.
Yeah, right. It sounds like they need a handbook to pass out to friends and family when someone's trying to cope with a chronic illness or a lifelong condition. You know, you need to, so that people can see what life is like from another perspective.
Well, it's empathy. And if you don't experience it, you don't really know it.
Right, right. And friendship is work. And sometimes the other person has to put in more effort. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. But I'm really happy to hear that you do have a tight network of very supportive people in your life. It's wonderful. And I wish you could get another bubble bath in there every week.
Thanks.
Because I have to say that, it sounds like you've been an amazing advocate for your daughter. And, if all children were so lucky, it would be a whole different world. And Karen, what's the best advice you've received for living with a child with a rare disease? And what advice do you have for someone whose child's been recently diagnosed with a rare condition?
The best advice I was given is to basically don't forget about myself and to take care of myself so that I can take care of her. And the advice I'd give somebody else is be an advocate. Don't take no for an answer. If you know your child best. So keep looking. I mean, we almost quit. We weren't going to put her through another test, but I'm glad we did because now we have that additional support system and we can hopefully help and contribute to future families whose child has been diagnosed with a CAMK2 mutation.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good advice. Karen, how can our listeners learn more about you and the CAMK2? And do you have any social media links that you want to share with us?
A couple of the parents are putting together a foundation. They're looking at all the legalities involved with that. So we have a very... basic page right now. It's CAMK2.org. From there, it has a link to their Facebook page. And there's also an email if your child has been diagnosed with a CAMK2 disorder, and that's info@CAMK2.org.
Okay, great. Well, we will definitely include those links on our website as well. Karen, thank you very much. Before we end, is there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners?
No, I feel like I rambled a
lot.
No, you did not at all.
You
did fine.
Not at all.
No, you did fine.
Right. It was excellent. Well, thank you very much, Karen, for joining us today. And we look forward to...
posting this episode?
I don't know what happened
Well,
in
getting this information out because... I can't even imagine, with everything you've been through, you've really set the foundation for future parents. And that's just.
Yeah. What came to mind when I was listening to this is what about parents in, let's say, term.
Yeah. In an area where genetic testing isn't
available. Right. What would they do? They just have to go by their gut, which is what you did in the beginning, and realize that there's something off and pursue the doctors until something is found in order to help their child.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in our case, we're not in a highly populated area. So what we had to do was have the testing mailed out to another state. I think it was California.
Wow.
But the capabilities there, if you have a neurologist or a geneticist that works with you, they can make it happen. I know funding is a problem for especially people in other countries, but it usually can be worked out.
It's worth the try. It's worth every effort.
It absolutely is.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on the show this morning and sharing the your story with us. I'm sure that we have, and I'm sure our listeners learned a lot about this episode.
Yes, thank you, Karen. I mean, with 5 kids, a full-time job, I can't even imagine. This. Your time is very precious, and we appreciate you spending it with us this morning.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.